thanks for being here today. Welcome to Divorce Confidential. I'm Michelle Delino, divorce and family law attorney in Washington State. Delino Family Law Group has offices in Seattle and Bellevue, and we serve clients all over Washington. I'm here with my co-host today, Amy Alpeza. Amy, how's it going?
Really good. Excited to be here. It's Thursday, as you guys know, coming to you. And yeah, just moving into February and looking forward to spring.
So awesome. Yeah. Here. Spring is upon us, which I think everybody's super ready for. So Amy is a certified real estate divorce specialist. And before we launch into our topic, I'm just thinking about it. And I did just want to ask you, like, I think it's like constantly evolving. So especially in Washington, can you give us a like 1 minute overview on what the market looks like right now?
Yeah. You know, it's such an interesting time of year. The January was very busy. We got back to seeing multiple offers again after about 7 months of a declining market. So January came back with a full force, multiple offers, not crazy over list price, but you know, within that 3 to 5% over list price, if they were priced really well. If they were underpriced, we definitely saw a little bit higher. But yeah, multiple offers, about 3 to 4, you know, per listing or per purchase that I've experienced. Yeah. And, you know, rates are down. We're in the low sixes for conventional and we're in the high fives for jumbo. And then a lot of buyers are, you know, choosing to buy their rates down too. So, it's a really good time to be a buyer. I think a lot of my clients who are looking to purchase are just waiting for the right home to come on the market. So that makes
a lot of sense. Yeah, I think it's just good to update everybody because things are constantly changing and people have been so scared about rates, but it seems like things are stabilizing. So that's awesome.
They are. Yeah. And I also think that people, you know, the media always wants to portray everything that's bad versus what's really happening. And, you know, we're in it 24 hours a day. So, you know, things that the media will say can sometimes be like 30 days, you know, post what's happening.
Yeah, totally. You're getting delayed information,
yes,
right?
When you were just listening.
Totally. Well, cool. Well, that's a good up to the minute update for everybody. So today we're going to talk about just something that's been coming up a lot, and I get a lot of questions about it. What happens when someone lies in family court, whether it's in your divorce or a parenting plan action that might be post-divorce? Like, what happens when somebody lies, and do people lie? First thing I'm just going to tell everybody, and Amy, you could speak from personal experience too.
Yeah.
People lie in family court. It's a lot of the time they lie in court. A lot of time they lie in a declaration, but people don't always tell the truth. And it can be really infuriating when you read something that your ex, you know, wrote saying X, Y, Z, and you're like, oh, hell no, that didn't happen. Right?
Isn't that crazy? I just can't even imagine being in front of a judge or not. And maybe that's why people think that they can get away with it, because they're writing it down on paper and they don't actually have to like appear in front of somebody, you know, to say that. But oh my gosh, no way. I would never be lying.
Totally. And it's a real thing. I mean, it really happens and it happens so often. And I get questions like, well, aren't there any consequences? And someone asked me the other day about, you know, oh, well, what about perjury? Aren't you supposed to get charged with perjury if you lie? You sign a declaration saying under penalty of perjury, you take an oath when you're testifying. And yes, that's all true. But one thing I think people need to understand is perjury is a criminal charge and really not something we see very often. And in a family court proceeding, no one's going to be like, oh, I'm going to report this to law enforcement and refer it to a prosecutor. Like, you're not going to get someone charged with a crime for lying 99.9% of the time, unless it's like lying about, you know, like, I don't know, insider trading or something, but that's not going to happen. So what does happen? I mean, people look bad, right? Like they look bad in court. And what does that mean? There are impacts and people need to know that. So here's my like high level tips for somebody. If your ex is lying in a declaration and if they are, you know, saying this person did X, Y, Z, or you are this or that, or you didn't show up for this, or you, you know, didn't call your kids that, or you told your kids this or that, or whatever it is, it's all the kind of he said, she said stuff that we deal with a lot. If that happens, go to your evidence. Like when you do a response to it, you'll have to draft a response with your attorney. If you have text messages that show that's not true, if you have like our family wizard messages that show that's not true, get those messages. If you have a third party, a third party declaration can be powerful if there was somebody there who saw or personally observed what happened. Get a declaration from them to say, hey, I was there. That's not what happened. The more that you can show the court, this person's not credible, this person will just say or do anything to look good and to win, the more the court is going to be able to take action. And the court can take action by restricting somebody's time if they're lying and they're lying about something that's material to parenting. Or, you know, if someone's hiding money and lied about not having certain accounts, then your attorney will do things like subpoena the accounts. One time I had somebody lie and say, oh, I don't have any accounts at Chase. Well, what do you know? We sent a subpoena and we had like four accounts. So there's different things you can do. And
what about like when people lie about like, you know, they're trying to get more time with their kid, or they're trying to take away time from the other parent with the children, and they make lies about, let's say, like abuse or neglect. I mean, do you see that a lot?
Yes, that's a really good question. A lot of the time people will say, and this is, I was talking to a client about this. She's, you know, going through a situation and saying, you know, my ex is saying, I'm doing, like, this is only happening at my house, that my kid is, you know, being abused at my house, these things are happening at my house, and the kid's acting out when they go to the other parent's house. And that must be because they're being abused at my house. Well, that's like speculation. So if someone's lying about you, it's one thing to say, I saw these bruises on my child and my child was nowhere else. And, you know, I didn't see the abuse happen, but it couldn't happen any other way. And in a situation like that, then usually CPS gets involved. If someone just lies about abuse and there's nothing else to corroborate it, like a CPS investigation or someone else that saw it, it's probably not going anywhere. If someone just says, this must be happening because my kid's acting out, or this must be happening because I had one where not that long ago where the other party called the police and made a police report against my client, and the police came out and they were like, it just looks like your son fell down. I mean, it's not, this isn't abuse. And then that looks bad because this guy is, you know, constantly trying to get the other parent in trouble for things they didn't do. When those things happen, you know, you want to talk to your attorney about how can we disprove this. And if someone does it too many times, then they really lose credibility. And if they do it again, and they're continually, I had someone once trying to change a parenting plan three times, every time saying the same thing. And every time the court was like, no, this didn't happen. And then at that point, the person starts having to pay your attorney fees. But yeah, lies about abuse, unfortunately, are really common. And the things to look for is it corroborated by someone else? Was there an investigation done? Was law enforcement involved? Did anyone else see this happen? Most of the time, the answer is no.
Okay. So what you're trying to find, like if somebody's lying, let's say about you or about the situation, so your advice is for them to obviously talk to their legal counsel about it, but you're going to try to find ways to disprove.
Discredit them and disprove them. It's one thing. Here's the thing. If someone, the court really values what we call like neutral witnesses. So if, let's say, mom is saying, dad always does X, Y, Z. Dad was super abusive in our marriage. And, you know, therefore he must be abusing our son. Well, if mom agreed to a parenting plan saying there was no abuse, because this is what happens a lot. One parent, you'll agree to a plan. Then later someone will come back and say, well, I know they're abusing my kid because they always abuse me. Well, you already agreed to something saying that didn't happen. And if you're the only person, if the only person claiming the abuse is the party, that holds far less weight than when we have that like neutral witness. So, okay, if we have somebody who's like a mandatory reporter, like a school counselor is reporting because they see the kid come to school and they know, you know, and they seem abused, or the kid reports to them that they were abused, that kind of stuff goes really far, right? I mean, it doesn't go far if someone's just basically talking out their mouth, no one else ever saw anything, and there's no other third party involvement. But like if you're in a situation where a child goes to school and they came from the other parent's house and they have bruises or they seem abused, well, that's a much more credible allegation of abuse than my kid came home and they're in a bad mood, so they must have been beaten. And I mean, I hate to say it, but like the kind of stuff that gets thrown around.
Yeah. But what about financial documents? Because you were talking about that. And I think that seems to be what gets a lot of people super fired up, right? Is one party usually one party is withholding information. And like you're saying, you know, you're having to summon these. I mean, isn't there any repercussions, whether it's financial, where then, you know, the party who has been transparent and, you know, has provided information, can't they then say, hey, I want you to pay my attorney's fees that we've had to, fight to basically find out the truth. I mean, does that happen or?
Sometimes that does happen. There's two different ways. Well, a few different ways, but one really common way to seek attorney fees if someone is lying about you and you've had to spend a bunch of time and money to disprove it is you can say, this person's been intransigent. This person has knowingly made false statements. This person has persisted in a course of conduct that's cost me a lot of money just to basically prove nothing happened. And they've done it, in bad faith. If someone's acted in bad faith, the court has broad power to award attorney fees. So that can happen. But here's the thing, too, for people to know, a lot of the time, you can ask for attorney fees, but it doesn't mean you're going to get them because the court will just kind of, the first time something happens, a lot of the time the court will say, you're post-divorce, or even if you're during the divorce, you can get attorney fees awarded based on need and ability to pay. So that's different than intransigence. So during the divorce and post-divorce, getting fees awarded based on bad behavior is a little bit different because there can be other bases for fees being awarded during a divorce. But a lot of the time, the first time the court will just be like, look, okay, I'm dismissing it. But then the second time, if it happens again, the court might start to realize I need to do something here to deter this person from continuing to bring these kinds of actions. So then they might award fees. A really common place that fees get awarded is on a contempt action. Contempt means you violated the parenting plan by doing this or that, or like you didn't pay your child support. So that's actually you an enforcement action. So enforcement actions and contempt actions where someone is claiming someone did or didn't do something and it can be disproven, fees are often awarded in those situations.
Got
But the big warning though is a lot of the time you might feel like you should get fees and the court just might not award them. And when fees are not required by statute, like in contempt, if you win contempt, you get fees. If a lot of the time they're not required by statute, and if that's the case, then
You don't get
can't
them.
do anything. Yeah, like some judges and commissioners will hand out fees a lot more often, so we'll be like, oh, that person likes to give out fees. But then we might have someone else, and we just know they're probably not going to give fees. Sometimes we try to like expectation set that with clients, or sometimes you might think you're not going to get something, and they're like, hey, here's all your fees. It just really depends. It's very case specific, kind of who you're in front of that day. So that
Well,
makes
and
sense.
like you said, probably depends on the judge that you're
It really
presenting.
does. It
Yeah.
really, really does. Yeah,
Awesome.
it's just interesting because so many people tell so many different stories, and a lot of the time it's just they really believe that's what happened or that's the narrative they've been telling themselves. Other times it's blatant, like I'm hiding finances, I'm
Yeah.
lying about disclosing finances. That can be really serious, and that's usually easier to disprove. I actually prefer it when someone lies about finances because we're going to catch them. I do. Like, I'm like, we're going to get you. But
I
when
love
someone
it.
lies about a he said, she said situation, it's so hard because it can have really big implications if someone's claiming abuse or DV,
Yeah.
and people get so emotionally charged. And really, a lot of the time, no one will really know what happened but the two people that were there. I mean, they
Yeah.
just won't. So, in
Well,
those situations, you just do the best you can.
and I mean, what would you tell people who are listening to this and are thinking, you know what? I have an ex that does that, or I have a soon-to-be ex-spouse that does that. Is it worth fighting over it? Like you said, is it worth trying to bring emotion? Like, when is it worth it?
That's a really good
When is
question,
it
and I get
not?
that question a lot. I tell people the number one way to look at things is what are you trying to accomplish? And that's how you work backwards and decide, is there really a return on investment here? So if it's something where, okay, you have a final divorce order that says any assets that are not disclosed above a certain amount, if they're not disclosed in this process and they were supposed to be, if you recover them later, then the person who didn't disclose them gets to keep 25%, the other person gets 75%. So there's usually a provision like that. If you find out someone with, totally lied and didn't disclose an account and you didn't know it existed and you find out later, and let's say the account's worth, $50,000, well, that's probably worth it. But
Got
if you're talking like somebody didn't disclose, this comes up a lot. Somebody didn't disclose like the $250 they had in Venmo, sitting in their Venmo account. Let it let it go. Like let it go. Like and thinking about what your goals are. Like if someone's lying about you, and this is another thing that comes up commonly, is people will say, oh, well, my ex is telling, everybody at the school, everybody in our like community, these things about me, and I want to do something about it. And I'm always kind of like, well, what do you want to do about it? What are the implications? Like, is it really affecting your parenting time? Is it really affecting your employment? Is it really harassing? Or is it just something you need to feel like, you know,
You
if
need
anyone that knows
revenge.
you is going to know it's not true anyway. Like, so where's the return on investment there? So look at what you're trying to accomplish. Look at, you know, whether it makes sense. A lot of the time too, there's things that, the last thing I'll say about it is there's things that you can't put a dollar value on, like parenting. So if someone has requirements they're supposed to fulfill in their parenting plan and they don't do them, and them not doing them, like them not going to counseling, them not doing XYZ, is affecting the child and is affecting like parenting time and really impacting your kid. Well, that's not the kind of thing you can say, how much money is it worth to me? That's the kind of thing where you have to go, okay, what is my goal here? My goal is for this person to do what the hell they need to do so my kid is safe with them. Okay, I'm probably going to go ahead and try to enforce that. So you really have to think about your goal. And then I tell people to work backward and figure out like if the return on investment is there financially or emotionally for you. Does that make sense?
Totally. That makes total sense. And I think that's such great advice because it can really save people a lot of heartache. And, it's hard in divorce because you feel like you've been wronged. Both parties feel like they've been wronged, regardless of the situation. And so it's hard to just put that ego aside and say, okay, it's fine. They can say whatever they want. They can tell the lies that they want and not have any recourse. But sometimes that's just the way you have to deal with it,
You do. And it's like anytime that you're involved in something, even if your divorce is over and you're going back and dealing with an issue like this, emotionally, you have to kind of figure out like how much is this worth it to me to like go back into this. You know what I mean? Like to go back into this kind of a battle and engaging with this person. A lot of the time I tell people, if I'm telling you it's not worth it, you know, it's probably not worth it. And that can be hard for you to hear, but you might have to find another avenue to deal with sometimes people saying really crappy stuff about you. You might need to work on therapy. You might need to deal with your, you know, work with your own community of friends and people that can support you and realize some of that just doesn't matter because you're not going to get that vindication that you want with a court order or a little bit of money and fees that's really going to take away the real issue, which is this person's crappy and it's good they're not in your life anymore. But you have to parent with them. So it's like that happens a lot too, you know?
No,
So,
that's all great advice. Well, I'm really glad that we did this topic because I don't think that we've talked about this before. And
No, and we really haven't. And it's something that's just been coming up a lot lately, you know. And there's a whole emotional side really to divorce and family law that I think it needs to be talked about more because it's what makes this area of law so different. It's one thing if you're just doing a business transaction with someone, like family law has it all, right? It has the drama of like the relationships. It has the business transaction side, like with real property and financials. It has the dealing with the kids side. I mean, it has it all. And the emotional side of it is like really casts a shadow over everything and can make a big difference in how you feel about your case.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that is all such great advice. I hope you guys that are listening took away some key points from this. And as always, if you have any follow-up questions, I don't know. Do they know how to contact us? Do they need to?
It's a good question. Maybe you do if you're listening, but if you don't, reach out. One thing you can do, one thing we have also too, this is a good time to just throw it out there, but Amy and I, we co-host a group that's local to Washington. It's local to Seattle and Bellevue. It's called the Do's and Don'ts of Separation and Divorce. We host in-person meetups once a month, and we host virtual meetups once a month that you can join from everywhere. So if you look up the Do's and Don'ts of Separation and Divorce on meetup.com, you will find us. Join our group and join our community. That's a really good idea and a good extension of this, just to kind of know what's going on and get more information. But yeah, if you want to follow up with us too, I mean, Amy, what's best for you? Is email best?
Yeah, email's always really good. I mean, we both have websites, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, websites and emails. If you go to either one of our websites, I think it's amyalpeza.com, right?
Is.
Yeah, so go to amyalpeza.com and you'll get in touch with Amy. Or for me, you can go to delinolaw.com. It's DELLINOLAW.com. And you can get in touch with me there. So, anyway, thanks for listening, you guys. We'll see you next time.